What's up, everybody? Welcome to the UHS Hardware Studio. I'm Louie, here today on our first episode of Locksmith Lounge with Louie. That's me. Today we have a great guest. This is going to be our first guest, a great friend of UHS, a confidant, a wonderful teacher and trainer that we have around all the time and see him at shows. You've probably seen him yourself. His name is Wayne Winton. If you don't know, he is a notable name across the security business as a member of SAFTA, the Safe and Vault Technician Association, as well as a major voice and face of the Aloha Security Professionals Association. He's the owner and operator of Tri-County Locksmith Service out of Colorado, as well as servicing the Carbondale, Aspen, and Glenwood Springs areas. He specializes in safes, vaults, ATMs, commercial, and residential security systems, and he can even help and has helped train police to be trained in case of emergency lockout situations, which is pretty amazing. Wayne, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm just happy to be here. This is great. I really enjoy this. I think this is great what you're putting on, and I enjoy a lot of the work that you produce as well. I enjoy seeing your videos and truly enjoy and appreciate your creativity in doing them. So thank you for having me.
For sure. Today. Thank you so much for saying all that, man. I look up to you and your work and your videos. Honestly, I think that the way you do your stuff is actually really notable as well. So thank you for being here, honestly. So we're going to jump straight into a quick game just to keep ourselves on a track for the show, basically. We're going to call this part the 5 W's. So I'm just going to ask you a couple questions about yourself, and then we can get into the deeper stuff about you and your business over the years. Just a second.
Sure.
All right. So my first question is going to be, who was your greatest influence and help in your journey as a professional?
Ah, boy, that's a really, really tough one. In my early years, Mr. Bob DeWeese was one who really reached out. He was one of the old guard kind of guys. And he saw a young kid that had a lot of ambition and not a lot of brains at that point in time. And he helped guide me to get to a lot better place.
Right.
So I would have to actually answer in a two-part question and say both Bob DeWeese and Dave McOmey have both been extremely, extremely good influential figures in my life. I like the way that they treat other people with humility and respect. And I didn't want to choose a mentor based off of technical ability only. I wanted somebody who was a good human as well.
Right.
So that way I could pick up on those traits as well.
That's very cool. Yeah. Learn how to be a businessman from like every aspect. It's very smart. It's very cool.
Exactly.
Good thinking. All right. Great answer. Our second question is going to be, what is the most embarrassing, insane, or crazy experience that's ever happened within your professional career? Like something you showed up to a job and everything went nuts. Anything you want to share like that?
I've definitely got some pretty funny war stories. One was, and this would be a great example of that humility and respect. I got a call for a lockout, and what happened is this couple, they were out on their deck and out on their hot tub on their deck. And so basically, to paint the picture, it's just a deck up on the legs up in the air. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to climb. You can't really climb down off of it. And there's no other way to get to it. And what happened was they had actually locked themselves out of this sliding glass door. And it wasn't technically their fault. You know, the sliding glass door has that little lever thing.
Right.
And sometimes it can just drop.
Some gravity,
That's exactly what happened to them. But the problem was their home was locked as well. So their neighbor couldn't actually get to let them in. So their neighbor ended up calling me. She's like, our neighbors are trapped out on their porch in their hot tub on their deck. They can't get down and we can't get in the house. So we have permission. The owners are here, but we're the only ones that have access to a phone right now. And they were just kind of yelling at their neighbors. So I'm like, okay, all right. Yes, this is, I can take care of this. No problem. So we get there and she's like, they're going to be naked. Basically.
Really intimate.
So I'm like, okay, all right. Well, we can handle this. So I go there, I meet the neighbor, we open up the door, and basically I grab some towels and some robes and some things on the way, and I hand it to him out the door, unlock the door, and basically just kind of lay that stuff out there for him. And you know, the amount, they said, really, truly thank you for being a respectful person of our intimate moment.
Thanks.
This particular incident, you know, that could have gone several different ways. You could have been rude. You know, there's creepy people that would have tried to take pictures.
Yeah, you could have came in with a camera and streamed the whole thing live if you wanted to. You know?
Yeah, there's so many ways that this could have gone wrong for exploitation and this and that and the other. The point is, be a good human and be a good
person out there. But that's where, you know, being a trained professional is important, and just being professional in general is, you know, conducting yourself the correct way. So that's really good, man. What a great story. Good on you, really, to bring them the towels and the blankets and everything. Really smart as well. And this is in the middle of winter as well?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was actually pretty chilly outside. It wasn't like snow on the ground, but it was getting a little crispy, like that first week in November.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine. It's probably terrible, to be honest.
Colorado, yeah, already got snow this year.
Already? So that puts it in- yeah. No, I mean, I don't even know what snow is, to be honest. So what is that? All right, my next question is going to be, what keeps you learning and making new opportunities for yourself?
Boy, you are just my mindset, and just the business mindset behind it tells me that as people, we're either growing or we're dying. You're either gaining more knowledge or you're shrinking. You're getting bigger or you're getting smaller. And so any day that I wake up and I'm not expanding my knowledge, I'm not helping somebody else expand their knowledge, or I'm not growing in one way, shape, or form or another, I see myself deteriorating. And so I just can't stand that fact. So I have to do something every day to try and grow, expand, touch somebody else, or try and improve somebody else's day.
That's a very detailed and beautiful answer. Well said, man. I always feel myself as more of like a shark. Like, I got to keep swimming or I'm going to suffocate. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I guess also within that whole thing, do you have like a really structured plan for every single day of your life? Like, do you like wake up at this time and like definitely do this and the other, or else your day doesn't go right?
Well, I have core values. Okay. And what that basically boils down to is I don't plan out my next day saying I'm going to do specifically X, Y, Z at these particular times. I suffer from ADHD. I'm horrible, like really, really, really bad.
That's ADHD, crazy. Me too, man.
And dyslexia too. Yeah. Wow. So it's difficult for me to keep on a specific schedule. But what I can do is I can say, I'm going to wake up at, 5:30 in the morning. I'm going to get a workout or some kind of exercise in the morning. I'm going to sit down and organize my day and organize my text messages, my emails, and my schedule. And usually by about 7 or 8 o'clock, now I have a good idea of what my plan is going to be. I'll usually have 2 or 3 calls scheduled and make sure those are my solid on-time things. And then I'll fill in the rest of the day with whatever comes along. So I structure my day so I can both put out fires and take care of the core basics of it. And then as the day winds down, my core values drift away back from business back to family. And if I've got to take the kids somewhere or be somewhere or make dinner or do something around the house, then I'll make sure that I'm there for that.
That's excellent, man. Well, I mean, I wasn't even aware of the fact that you were a family man as well. It's a lot of stuff to stack together. That wasn't one of my questions at the 5, but I might keep that because that was a great answer. Okay, so my next question is going to be, what are your most used tools or specific items that you use every day or have to replace most often?
Flashlight and a Leatherman. This stuff stays on me right here, and these tools come out almost every single day, every single job, every single time.
So it's like a must-have, something you can't go without. That's like your first thing you put on in the morning after you put your pants on, clearly.
Yep, I put my little tool belt on. It's right here. I've got lock picks. I've got a flashlight. I've got a Sharpie and a Leatherman tool. I use them every single day at work or not at work.
So when it comes to that flashlight, is that like a specialty flashlight or something you can get anywhere?
Milwaukee flashlight.
Okay.
Just pick it up.
UHS-hardware.com. Just send your flashlight. Got you. Just keep a nice flashlight on hand, extra batteries, all that kind of good stuff. I got you. All right.
Yep.
So you just kind of wake up a locksmith in the morning. That's just kind of who you are. Very cool. All right. Okay. So then my next question, how do you keep yourself so knowledgeable on all the many facets in emerging technologies of security, I should say specifically?
Oh, okay. Just the position that I've put myself in. And again, I'll reference one of those people that were one of my mentors. Dave McComey said he's kind of like a spider in the middle of a web. Because we founded Locksmith Nation, because I have my own page, waynslockshop.com, because I have ties to almost every supplier and every association out there, because we've been friendly to all of these people, and these people are my friends and I know them and we try and work and interact with them. Anytime each one of those strings gets drawn to a particular entity and there's some vibration or some movement in that spectra of the field, I get feedback from that. If there's something going on in the automotive industry, I'll get a text message that says, so-and-so is happening, something major is happening. Like there was several things that happened. You know, the whole thing with Ilco and selling to AutoZone, or, you know, just all these different things. I will get those messages because people expect me in a position of leadership to be able to make a call on that and take a stand and say, hey, we're either really supporting this or this is really damaging to the community and the industry. And we need to take action to make sure that we say we're not okay with this and that we can begin organizing so that we can have a unified voice. Right. And get our message across.
It's very important. I've been thinking about this myself a lot recently. It's very important that everybody is on the same page as to what we're trying to accomplish and who's trying to be served. So good points from you.
Exactly. Exactly. So I just get all this feedback from everybody. I'll get feedback from the manufacturers when a new tool comes out. A lot of times they'll just hit me up and they'll say, hey, do you want to do some beta testing for us? They'll just send something out my way.
That's very cool.
Feedback. And then I'm also very respectful of those people as well. A lot of times I'll have to sign an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, or something like that. But even if I didn't have to, integrity would just say, hey, here's my feedback. You let me know, and I'll be very honest with them. You let me know when you'd like me to put this information out, and we'll collaborate with that.
Understood. Yeah. It's about, you know.
So that's really how I do it, is I just stay in the middle, and every time I hear something or see something, I will give my feedback on that, and then I'll let that come back, and that's how we stay in it.
Okay. Once again, great answer. Thank you so much. All right. It seems to be really important to have great mentors. I mean, it seems to be one of the major points of becoming a locksmith in all rights. When a person, this is outside the game, by the way, we're past that now. I'm just going to ask you a random question. When people are moving into becoming a locksmith, how do they source themselves a viable mentor? Like, where do you find somebody who you can respect and who can guide you, who's respectable within the world of such a you know, locksmithing in itself? Like, it seems like a very difficult thing to be able to search for. Like, you can't just go on Google and look for reputable and respectful locksmiths. You know, like, how do you find that?
Right. That is pretty difficult to do. I would say what I did is being involved in the groups online and watching and seeing how certain people interact with others. There are some people who, in a group or in a community, when somebody asks a question, there's two types of people out there. There's somebody who likes to tear everybody else's stuff down. Yeah. There's two ways to have the tallest building in the city: tear everybody else's down so that yours remains the tallest, or put in the blood, sweat, and tears and actually build the tallest building out there.
Right.
You can see who actually knows what they're talking about, who is actually knowledgeable, and who conveys that knowledge in a respectful way on these forums, through the associations, through the forums, and just by paying attention to how they treat every single individual, not based on who they're interacting with, but based on, hey, I'm interacting with another person. I need to uphold my standards as high as possible and treat them with respect.
Right.
I can't tell you how many times somebody will post a question and somebody's just looking for an answer, and somebody will write, call a locksmith. It's like, that's not a helpful answer. It just only delayed the
actual help
progress and actually helping this person out. And it just drives me nuts to see this. And the only reason that person said that is because they don't feel confident in themselves,
right?
Because somebody put them down. They're passing that on. So look for somebody who's not making negative comments. Look for that person who's never talking crap about somebody else. Because here's the thing about somebody who talks about somebody else: if they're talking about you behind that somebody else's back, they're going to be talking about you behind your back,
right?
In no time at all. So finding somebody online who you can trust, who you think goes along with your moral values, would be a good start. Joining the associations, whether it's a local association or whether it's a national association, ALOA, SAFTA, any of these associations, and actually taking some time to get out and network with the group. You can learn just as much at the bar, at an association meeting, talking to the old timers and hearing war stories, as you can in the classroom. Sometimes even more is learned after the fact at a good dinner.
After a couple of beers, they'll share anything, I'm sure.
Or a couple of beers than anything else. And so that's the way that you find your mentor. And then you just kind of connect with somebody, and every single good person, all the best top tier people, they all had a mentor who compressed decades into days and transfer that knowledge to them.
Okay. I mean, I could imagine that it's almost close to impossible to be able to learn as much as you need to know to not only run a business, but to also be a really good locksmith without all of that. Because I mean, just the amount of resources that there are to watch YouTube videos and to try to figure this stuff out, you know, just picking locks, I can't see it leading to anything but a very odd relationship between you and your clients where you're not really sure what you're doing or how to talk to them or how to condone yourself in their presence or whatever. I feel like it's really important for a lot. I mean, actually, here's another side of that question. Is there any kind of a source or a platform where mentors are gathering themselves to be found? Like, is it beneficial in any way to the mentors to make themselves more apparent or more findable?
Boy, that's pretty tough. I think everybody gets so caught up in their own lives and their own stuff. I don't think a lot of people really offer it as, hey, I'm going to, you know, put myself out there as a mentor. I can tell you that personally, I've taken on about 10 different people. I've just seen them, and they didn't ask me either. I just kind of saw that they were floundering a little bit, and I said, here's a couple of suggestions that will help you through your immediate problem. And then they apply that, they put it to work and it works. And then I'll then offer that afterwards and say, hey, you know what, if you ever need anything, I'm always available and I'm willing to help and mentor you right now. So if you need anything, keep my phone number, keep my cell phone number, and give me a call. I'll help you with anything technically related. I'll help you with anything business related, and I'll also help you with anything going on in your personal life as well. If you need a little bit of advice or just an ear to bend for a little bit, I can do all of that.
That's great.
I helped, like I said, about 10 people out now, and it's really changed a lot of their lives for the better.
I could say for sure, just having someone to call and just answer a question in itself is really powerful. Just having somebody with patience to listen to your complaints or to hear what you're trying to explain. You know, people are really busy. So I could see a full-time locksmith not really wanting to take the time to answer calls in the middle of their day, you know, and taking that time it's really important. So it's good to have people like you out there.
Right?
So thank you.
It is. So as far as an actual place where mentors get together and say, hey, we're mentors, would people like to come be mentorees? I don't know that anything like that exists at this current stage, or at least in that format. I can tell you that, like, I'm the Aloha Southwest board director.
Right.
So if I have somebody in my region who I think needs help, like I just mentioned, I offer that to them. So that would be a really good way, is go to one of your associations and pick up a mentor there. Find somebody who's older, who's done everything there is to do, who's very friendly, very personable, and they're going to be on their way out. Like, I'm ramping up. I'm building an empire. Some of these guys are, you know, ramping down, and they would love nothing more than to pass on a lifetime of knowledge to somebody willing to listen.
Aaron, I think we're going to go into our game. This is the portion of our show we're going to call Quizlock, where locksmiths come to compete. Wayne, we're going to have today a special version just for you. We're calling this one Locksmiths and Colorado, an honor for yourself. So we're going to go ahead and get into this. It's going to be a multiple choice kind of a scenario. Just kind of, you know, we're going to count your points up and see what you get at the end. I'm probably not going to count a single point, but you'll be a winner, I'm sure, no matter what. And we'll see what we know together.
Okay.
All right. Aaron, let's go ahead and go into question one. Okay, Wayne, which tool is specifically designed to manipulate the combination wheels in a safe lock?
Autodialer.
Oh, already too quick. The answer is D, autodialer. Let's find out. And Wayne is correct, professional on the case. All right, let's go on to question two. Let's make this one a little harder, Aaron. Let's see how it goes. What is the state animal of Colorado? I'm sure you know this from elementary school. If you want to go ahead and jump ahead, hit me.
Oh, man, I actually don't know.
Okay.
I think it's the bighorn sheep, but I'm not sure.
Okay, so that's...
I'm not a Colorado native.
Oh, all right. Interesting to find out. A, black bear. B, bighorn sheep. C, metal jumping mouse. Or D, the painted turtle. Let's find out what the answer is. It is B, the bighorn sheep. Way to go, Wayne. Ding, ding, ding. All right. Next question coming up is, what is radiological safe cracking? Is it A, using x-rays? You want to do it before I read really long answers?
I believe it's one.
All right. It's is it A? Let's find out.
A.
It is. It's using x-rays to view the internal mechanisms of a safe in order to figure out how you need
to crack. Would you like some more information on that? There used to be. Actually, I've got one right here. So see this safe lock? Those are metal wheels, okay? On those metal wheels, you can actually see the gates on there. This is a gate right here. one of these little openings right here.
Gotcha.
They actually built locks for the government because of that, that had plastic wheels or nylon wheels. They couldn't be x-rayed. So they solved that problem.
That's smart. I can't imagine that using x-rays to view safes would be very safe generally. So I wonder how many people got cancer from that. Anyway, let's go on to our next question before we talk more about x-rays. Which of these specialized tools is used to decode or open combinational locks by applying tension to the wheel pack? A, decoder knife, B, plug spinner, C, jiggler keys, or D, tubular lock pick?
A.
Decoder knife. I feel like there's too many A's in this answer key so far. All right, next question. In the context of safes, what does TL-15 rating indicate? A, 15 minutes of fire protection, B, 15 minutes of tool resistance. Is that the answer, Aaron? And you're on fire, man, you're killing it. You know way too much about everything. It seems like you are really a true professional. Let's go on to our next question. Which of the following attacks involves applying force safe handle to engage the bolt work? A, torque attack, B, side attack, C, punch attack, D, peeling attack.
See.
Let's find out.
It could technically be a side
attack. Apparently it's a torque attack. All right, so
technically there's two, well, it would be called bolt punching. It was called bolt punching, where you'd find a bolt on the side of the safe and keep hitting it over and over and over and over again until you would defeat the bolt of the lock, because there was no protection at that point in time. So,
and that's that main bolt right there at the bottom, the main locking mechanism is the bolt, correct?
Yes, which is what would lock up your safe, and a bolt bar would come into here. And so the actual old school technical term was called punching or chipping safes.
All right.
It was called. That's what the mafia actually used to call it.
Yo, so awesome.
I have not heard the term torque attack, and actually torque technically doesn't make sense because you're not applying torque to the safe.
I'm such a fan that you're fixing this question. I'm just
you're punching from the side with brute force attack. You're not applying torque in any way.
All right, so we're going to put a weird symbol on the screen for this one, because it turns out it's actually answer C. Wayne has fixed our question. Thank you, Wayne, for fixing our question and re-educating the people. Thank you.
Ask some other safe techs if they agree. Just right, so we have don't take my biased opinion.
If you disagree with Wayne, leave it in the comments. For now though, he's reigning champion of knowledge, so we'll see how it goes. From what language, Wayne, did Colorado get its name? A, Cheyenne, B, English, C, Spanish, or D, French?
I think it's Cheyenne or Spanish. I can't. I would say Cheyenne.
Oh, okay. Let's find out. It was Spanish. Colorado. I guess it does Spanish. All right. You know, actually, random bonus points for that. If you happen to know the name, that actually means in Spanish. What does Colorado mean?
Is it color? I think it's something color. Or descriptive word of color.
Reddish. Yeah, I guess Rado color. Yeah, makes sense. Reddish colored. Colorado means reddish colored. All right. Great fun facts for everybody. Education all around. What we got coming up next, Aaron? Okay, next question is, which inventor is credited with creating the modern combination lock used in safes today? Do you know this off the bat? You want me to? I can go through the names if you want. Okay, A is Linus Yale Jr., B, Harry Sorif, C, Alfred Charles Hobbs, or D, James Sargent?
The modern lock is the Sargent and Greenleaf, so I would have to say James Sargent would probably be my best answer. I don't know my history with paper.
No, but you did it. You got it. Way to go. You're right. Killing it, man. All right, next question. What is the time lock mechanism in a vault primarily designed to prevent? A, unauthorized access. B, safe cracking, C, time travel, D, hold up scenarios.
So technically, A and D are a similar answer. It's designed to prevent holdup scenarios. What happened was back in the day in the wild, wild west, if you wanted access to the bank vault, all you had to do was go get the bank manager, because you know he had the combination. So you take him, you put a gun to his head, you force him to open up the vault, and boom, there you go. You don't have to break in or to anything. You don't have to put any work in. You don't have to defeat the vault itself. You just get the answer from them. So after all of these bank managers, nobody wanted to be a bank manager. They said, heck no, I'm not going to be that. That was actually the most lethal job
with
the most hazardous environment that you could possibly have at that point in time.
Yeesh.
Therefore, they decided we need an answer for this. So what a time lock does is you set up and you wind the time. It's basically a very, very sophisticated, fine-tuned watch that goes inside the safe or the vault. And you would wind it down, and you'd have different settings for time, because obviously overnight, from between the hours of when you shut down at 5 and you reopen in the morning, that's going to have a different setting from when you leave at Friday at 5 and come back at Monday, 9 a.m.
Right.
So the entire time you could have the combination to the vault. And this is very true today. You could have the combination to the vault and you still can't get into it or have access unless it's within that time window. Until the time clock has ran down or the time lock has run down, you cannot have access to that vault. This also, as another little piece of information, is the number one cause of vault lockouts.
Okay.
So we do have to figure out how to defeat this particular mechanism inside there quite often.
And so it can be set off and then you have no way of undoing it, is basically the situation.
Oh, there's always a way to do it. And basically what it is it sits in there and there's a bar that goes in the way called the Schnubber bar. When that is activated, the bolt work hits against it and it can't work. As it gradually moves back with that time clock, then you can actually access it. Now, if that lock fails or something happens and it gets jammed up, because it's a complicated clock inside there, if something happens, then you would have to defeat that time lock, neutralize it, and then be able to gain access to be able to service that. Wow. Either of which one can be done from the outside of the container using a very, very small hole to be able to defeat that mechanism, to be able to repair it and put it back in service.
Safes are...
Yes, hold up scenarios is definitely why that was.
Safes are incredibly interesting. I'll go ahead and say that much, as are you, Dwayne. Way to go. Hold up scenarios is the right answer. Way to go. Great, great job. Do we have anything else coming up after this? Okay, here we go. What is the nitroglycerin method of, in context of safe cracking? How would you describe that?
If you want to read them, you can.
Yeah, no. I mean, do you want me to? It seems like a lot of words.
So, the basic idea was they actually came up with what's called cannonball safes. If anybody's ever seen a cannonball safe, it's the very, very old screw door safes that had the big round container on top and a big pedestal on the bottom. Banks used to use these as their bank vaults. And what people would do before this technology was available is they would pour nitroglycerin in between the door of the safe and the safe itself, so there was a little gap in between the two. You could put nitroglycerin down in between there and then cause an impact, and it would blow the door off the hinges. That was the original attack that was designed by people that figured out how they could open up safes. This is where the dynamite theory came.
Right.
Yeah. Every time I go open a safe, somebody asks me, when are you going to get the dynamite? This is why they did that.
Okay.
This is where it leads back to. So what they did was that they came up with these cannonball safes that actually screw together. The lid literally is like a foot thick of steel, and it threads into there.
Wow.
Well, now that the tolerances are so tight and you have what's called a screw door, you can't get the nitroglycerin down in between the two. There's no room to be able to do that. And the screw force doesn't allow it to penetrate in. Therefore,
right,
it neutralizes the attack. So I don't know which one of these answers.
Yeah, it's supposed to create a controlled explosion to breach a safe. I mean, I can't imagine how controlled that would be, but that's really impressive. So how much of safe technology goes back to just like 1910 to 1920 and 19, around then, like Wild West specifically? It seems...
I mean... A lot goes back to then. Buying a safe back then was really actually probably one of the largest investments in a business. You have to think, there wasn't machining tools. You couldn't make a set of wheels like this by turning them on a lathe because there wasn't an electric motor.
Right.
Let alone a tool steel and lathe and all of these different things. They had to... The origin of our industry and trade actually goes back to blacksmiths.
Right.
A blacksmith used to make both the lock and the key, and they were the only ones that had that technology at that point in time because they had to physically make those two things together in order to work, right? So then it takes on even more. Eventually, the first safes were actually hobnail safes. And it was a team effort between a carpenter, a skilled carpenter, and a blacksmith. And then they would build a wood chest. They would interlace it with metal so that you couldn't just chop through it with an axe. And then they would put a sophisticated locking device on there, and they would actually hide it so that you wouldn't even know that it had a locking key on it. Like, finding the keyhole was actually a difficult part of the ordeal and part of the security. Then all of those pieces put together, that's how the first safes were created. Then they started using cast iron and actually casting them. But now, let's say I've got a 4,000 pound safe that I bought, and I got to bring this on the Oregon Trail by mule to my business from Cincinnati, Ohio. Right. All of a sudden, you can see how major this is.
Right.
For a company to get a safe was a huge deal, and that's why they're so important these days.
All right, cool. This is incredibly interesting. Thank you for being a guest on this show. All right, what's our next question here? Okay, which of the following is not a type of safe lock? A, combination lock, B, biometric lock, C, key lock, or D, gravity lock?
I'm wondering if this is another one of those funny trick
questions. It seems tricky.
So electronics do have biometrics. So I would say combination lock is obviously, this is a combination lock right here. This is a key lock right here. So that's going to eliminate those two. Biometrics should be an electronic lock that has a fingerprint, hand, or face scan on it. So that should be legitimate as well. By default, I would say gravity lock.
That was really great. Way to like suss that out. It is gravity lock. D was a correct answer. Really beautiful work there, man. All right, what is the tallest mountain in Colorado? Mount McKinley?
Pike Peak.
Let's find out. Pike's Peak. Oh, it's C, Mount Elbert.
Okay, Pike's Peak's the most famous. We get a lot of 14ers here. All of those ones are all over 14,000 feet.
I mean, that's ridiculous. So, Colorado, known for the tallest mountains in the world. Of what stone is the Colorado Capitol State Building made of? The State Capitol Building of Colorado is made of what stone? A, marble, B, cement, C, gypsum, or D, limestone?
Boy, I'm going to take a wild shot in the dark because I live next to Marble, Colorado, that actually mines marble that is at equivalent to or higher than Italian grade marble that's imported.
That's interesting. All right, let's find out. It is A, marble. Way to go. You are like really killing us. This is a good quiz for you, man. All right, our next questions are going to go into what is the significance of the UL-687 in relation to safes. And it is a UL standard for burglary resistant safes. It's a UL standard for fire resistant safes, standard for safe insulation, or standard for electronic locks on safes.
Wow, that's a good one. I should know this and I don't. And now I'm a bit embarrassed by that. I believe it's fire rating.
Let's find out. It is a standard burglary resistance. Well, it's all right. You know, we're all learning together. It's okay. Sometimes you got to just go back in time and remember things. But up to now, you've been freaking amazing, man. Don't you worry. What's coming up next? Anything else? Oh, that was the last question. Way to go. I'm going to say that you just got yourself exactly 15,000 points, putting you at least on the top of our board of people so far. Got yourself on the board of leaders of Louis Locksmith Lounge. So way to go. That's backwards once again. Okay, so next we're going to go into another section of the show. I forgot where my notes are. Okay, so since I asked you a bunch of deep questions early on, we can hop back into the future of locksmithing if you want to get more specific on it in a little bit. But I guess let's go ahead and talk to you about you. I guess what got you into this line of work?
It's a crazy story. 2000, if you're old enough, you remember the 2009, 2008, 2009 crash, big economic downturn.
Yeah.
This was our equivalent of the Great Depression. It was the largest financial disaster in history, second only to the Great Depression. And so people lost a lot. I was out in the oil field. I was a young kid, willing to work, you know, willing to work hard. I was working 12, 14, 18 hour days every single day, 7 days a week for months on end. And that is not an exaggeration. I would literally get in my truck at 3 o'clock in the morning, drive an hour and a half to get into another truck to chain up, to drive in the snow another hour and a half to get to the equipment, to finally actually start our work day, work our 8, 10, 12 hours, and then go back and do that all over again. Now we have to do that because that's what was required of me to provide for my family at that point in time. It was the only work that I could do. I didn't have college education or any of those things. So I just had to work through sheer brute force and sheer will. So I did that for a long time and ran heavy equipment, bulldozers, excavators, I ran everything with wheels and without. If it was on the job site, I could run it. Haul trucks, you know, motor grader, everything, water trucks, everything we could run.
You made a pretty good living doing that kind of work as well?
Yeah, I did. You know, I was making, you know, at that time in 2010 or whatever, 26, 28 bucks an hour working, 90, 120 hour weeks.
Yeah.
You can get a pretty decent paycheck.
Right.
And then as with everything, the oil field kind of came and busted and left.
Right.
And then when that happened, the economic crash happened. And therefore, luckily, I actually managed to get out of the oil field and get into one of the local gravel pits.
Okay.
Which those actually usually the economy usually doesn't affect them as well.
Right.
Because those jobs are going to come like when the economy is going really bad, they're going to do infrastructure,
right,
grants and things like that. So the government's going to start opening up the purse strings, and the gravel pits will make the gravel, the concrete, asphalt, all that stuff.
Gotcha.
So I was actually saved from that up to about 2012. And then finally in 2012, I was one of the last, I was the last equipment operator to get laid off from the company. And I told him, I was like, hey, if you guys lay me off, I'm not coming back. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be seasonal.
Right.
I'd been seasonal too long earlier in my career.
So. This was where you were in Colorado then?
In Colorado. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, so I was like, okay, time to go find something else and go do something different. I've been a big kid in the sandbox and played with my Tonka toys long enough. My back hurt real bad.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, a bulldozer does not have suspension. So my back is wrecked. The oil field chews up young bodies and spits them out. That's what it does.
It's a lot of work. I mean, it's a ton of work out there.
Ton of work. And most of the people that I knew at that time ended up, getting painkiller addictions, alcoholism, all of these things are really just kind of.
Yeah, it goes right along with working till you're like ready to kill yourself. So you got to do something to deal with it.
Yeah. And I was finding myself there, I leave at 3 o'clock in the morning, get home at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, just enough to, maybe possibly enjoy a sip on a beer and a couple bites of food. And that's it. It's time to go to bed, get 3 hours of sleep and do it all over again.
Yeah.
It's miserable.
Yeah.
And so I wanted a change, and the opportunity came up to purchase this business. The original owner was on the descent, he was tapering off. The company didn't even make, they didn't even make $100,000. I think when I took it over the last year he was in charge, he had taken like 16 weeks off just for vacation. And so the company had only made about $80,000. And I was like, okay, well, I can really certainly turn things around. So I did have to move. It was still in Colorado, but I had to move about an hour and a half away. And I stayed in a hotel and just learned.
Okay.
My family was back home.
All right.
And I just stayed in the hotel. The business came with 90 days training, which again is not enough.
No, of course not.
For anything, for anybody. It came with a van, fully stocked van,
tools, nice.
Company okay. name, phone number, and the reputation that the business had.
And were you already operating into the three locations then, or just out of one location?
It was called Tri-County Locksmith.
Okay.
So there's three counties
okay.
That are up here, Pitkin County, Garfield County, and Eagle County. Are the three okay. counties that we service, and it's kind of weird they all kind of come together in a weird way, but it's just a good name.
I got
the name
you.
Was actually go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, how many people do you employ, I guess, in your, do you have a fleet at this time, or is it just you still?
So I've got myself, I've got an office lady, operations manager, and then I've got two techs on the road
okay
right now, and then I've also got a business partner, John, who we've started up another company with, John Wayne Lock and Safe, kind of fun little play on words.
That's nice, yeah.
And
that's a cool name.
So we're working on that in another area. And my marketing strategy is this: I've partnered with somebody who has. We've got the security game, so it's Reliant Security. John owns Reliant Security. That's all the alarms, cameras, all that stuff. That's what he does. That's his
okay.
jam. That's what we're supposed to do. I've got the locksmith side of things locked down for the entire area. Tri-County Locksmith Service. And then now we thought, how appropriate, we can gain yet another Google business listing by opening up a separate entity and actually having a showroom and a shop with this. And so now we've got John Wayne Lock and Safe. So when you search in my area, I don't show up once, I don't show up twice. I cover the entire page. And if it's not me, it's still me.
All right. We could do a whole discussion with you on how to market a company successfully as well. It seems like you're really on top of this marketing thing, to be quite honest.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I guess, let me actually see if we can stick to more questions. Let me move on to the next thing. Answers. Great answer, by the way. What do you do to occupy your non-working hours? What do you do outside of work? What do you do when you're not in a van opening things?
Okay, so I look at things like the wheel of life. Okay, if you've got your wheel of life here, you're going to have a couple spokes on that wheel of life. And I need to dedicate equal amounts of time and energy to myself. That is one spoke on this wheel. One spoke is the work spoke, and the other spoke is the family spoke. And if any one of those spokes gets out of round and I don't give that much equal attention to it, then obviously you're going to have an oval and not a round wheel. And if you can imagine trying to go fast on an oval, it's not going to happen.
Bumpy.
So I need to contribute equal amounts of time on all fronts.
Gotcha.
So if I'm not working, I'm usually hanging out with my family, spending time with my kids, teaching them things, spending time with my wife, just doing whatever it needs to happen around the house and to support my family.
That's cool.
Because what are we working for
but
to support them?
Exactly. And you guys like, sports or hunting, anything outdoors? What do you guys usually do, in your spare time?
So we used to go rock crawling. I had a buggy at one time. I just didn't have the time for it. Don't do a whole lot of sports. We'll watch UFC fights. We'll every now and then, if somebody's fighting that I know, we'll usually grab whatever pay-per-view that is. We actually flew to Vegas for my son's 18th birthday. Cool. When he turned 18, we flew to Vegas.
Nice. That's a great.
Caught a Nate Diaz fight.
Dope.
His last fight.
That's a
actually
great fight that was too.
Yeah, it was.
Love
we
Nate
were there
Diaz.
Live.
That's cool, man. And, that's really cool.
And so that's about it. I try and come up with fun, unique ways to spend time with them and just do fun stuff with them. Family has side by sides. We'll get out in the outdoors and go do stuff.
Okay. So I guess next question is going to be regarding your technical prowess, your desire to take things apart, know where all the little pieces go, get into these incredibly dense and ridiculous machinery pieces. Safes in themselves is absurd to me. Locks, taking that apart, putting that together. I don't understand how you can keep it all together in your brain. When did you notice for yourself that you were able to care so much about things like that and to put the work in to be good at that?
It all goes back to this was my last shot. When I left the construction industry, I left something. I was every bit as good as an operator as I am a locksmith. When I go in, I go all in. I was the last one to be laid off. I could run anything. There was not anybody that could do what I could do on that job site. And I made sure of it. And it was made sure that I had employment up to the last moment. So I took that same dedication and applied it to this trade. That's all I did. I didn't do anything different. Is it my idea of a fun time to take this apart and put it back together? Is that a joyful experience for me? No, it's probably not the most fun thing to do. But I knew that I had to give 110% to whatever it is that I went and did, because I uprooted my family and moved them out here with
gotcha.
Me. And it was sink or swim. I had to succeed. So I'm good at it because I knew the drive and purpose behind it. And the drive and purpose behind it was to be able to support family and create a good income.
It's a great lesson for everybody out there. Keep your focus in mind, keep yourself on the right track, and you'll always get things done to the best of your abilities. Beautiful. Wayne, this has been really, really fantastic. Okay, so I guess if you have any thoughts, anything specific that you would say you'd want to discuss or that you are worried about in terms of the future of locksmithing, security, safe technician type work, anything that you are seeing coming that people should be focused on, excited about, or worried about?
Boy, that's a good question. Whether or not we're going to have enough people in the field that actually want to do tradesman work. You go to a high school or a college today, everybody's graduating in computer science, people skills, healthcare. There's not very many skilled labor tradesmen and there's not very many people filling those jobs. And it's kind of sad that there aren't more people that are willing to do this kind of work. It provides a very good lifestyle. If you know how to actually do your job correctly and know the business behind it, you know, I've more than 10x'd this business from when we picked it up.
Right.
So that puts us, you know, just shy of that $1 million mark.
And this to me is kind of where that whole family-based business thing kind of comes in. Like, it's easy for a locksmith because they're working and working and working and doing their job. It's easy for them to teach their kid to do something to take on with them, but it's probably really difficult. There's not a locksmith class in college, you know, like there's no place to just find this. It's such a niche need, like it's a need-based scenario. Like, and when you need a locksmith, you need a locksmith, but you never, unless you're related to one or a locksmith yourself, you're not thinking of locksmiths until you need a locksmith, you know? So it's probably something that needs to be really pushed and have some real thoughts behind, like how to recruit people into the trade, if that's the case, you know?
Fun fact, they used to 100% teach locksmithing courses in prison.
Oh.
So think about that for a little while.
Yeah, I'm a little confused by that.
It was considered a trade. It wasn't considered anything any different than a carpenter or a plumber or an electrician. It was just considered another trade. However, they didn't realize that these people were probably learning the same techniques that they could use to figure out how to escape from prison.
It's actually in itself the whole conundrum of the fact that locksmithing is in a way illegal at times. The idea of like picking up these things, being able to break into stuff, is seen as a thing that you don't want people to be able to do, which is why it's, you know, regarded as need to be safe. But it's almost in its own way, you have to take apart things that need to be thought of as secure. It's like being a person who makes viruses for computers. You have to be the person who knows how to get rid of them to be able to be the person who makes them, you know, like, so it's like a balanced scenario. You never know who is who, really, I guess. And that's why
exactly. And I think that right there, what you just said, that is the problem that most people have with professional information about security bypass being posted out there on public for the public to consume, is the whole difference. What separates locksmiths from any other trade or industry is the integrity of the locksmith doing the work. Now, when you take, I have that integrity, I could rob my customers blind for crying out loud if I wanted to, but there's no way that I would trade what I have for that. Now, I can't say that everybody else that watches a video or sees a lock picking video or sees a safe opening video or whatever they see has the same level of integrity and intention that I do. That's the whole problem with public information sharing that I see.
It all goes back and forth. You know, it's hard to say at which point it's important to stop teaching and at which point, you know, I mean, I know exactly where we should stop. You know, clearly you shouldn't show people how to decode the exact codes on anyone's thing. How to use a leashy is not something that we should be teaching anyone how to do publicly, surely. Well, that's where things become, you know, paywalled and you have to be part of an organization to know them or talk to a person who knows. And that's why it's important that we all follow the rules and get a LOA certified. Something about that is, what are there other certification schools out there that exist, ways to become more secure, more, you know, security based as a person to know what you should be doing besides Aloha?
There's a lot of great systems out there. What my page, waynslockshop.com, it's all video based. That's the way that I learn. And when I was coming up, there wasn't YouTube. There wasn't any information on there. There was YouTube, but there wasn't any locksmith information on there. I had absolutely no resources. The only way that you could gain information or knowledge is you had to wait for a trade show, and then you had to save up enough money to go to a trade show and go to that trade show and go learn from that trade show. Well, here's the problem with that. It took me 6 years to be able to save up enough money to be able to even go attend one of those things. So I was providing not the best service for my clients, and I wasn't as prepared as I should have been because I didn't have access to that information because of financial burdens. So the element of taking that out and the drive behind doing what I do with my videos is to teach people and to give them that knowledge. I want somebody to say, I've never done a continuous hinge before, but I can watch one of Wayne's videos and I will do my research and I will put in the work the night before, and then I will educate myself on how to do that professionally and properly, and then I will go execute that job. I'm not afraid of it, and I will do it professionally. That's the whole goal between the video concept of my website. That's just one opportunity. There's waynslockshop.com. You can go there, fill out an application. Aloha offers the great education, right. aloa.org. Is a great way to get there. They offer webinars. They have code of ethics classes. They have fire door safety classes. They do a lot of things that I don't do. And then there's specialty sites, like if you're going to do safe and vault work, I just interviewed Dave McOmey, probably the best safe cracker of, or one of the best of all time.
Your mentor.
He's up there, correct? In that Mount Rushmore top five.
Right, right.
You know?
For sure.
He's got a site called NSO, nso.com or davemcomey.com. That's where I would recommend people go for safe and vault education.
Okay.
Follow the people who are the best at what they do and learn from them.
All right. I think we should start our own Mount Rushmore of locksmiths, maybe. You know, that's a good it's a good name to have up there. Your face could be on there as well. It's really cool.
It's humbling.
Anything that you want to push or plug at this time? Anything that you want to put out there for the world?
Wayne's Lock Shop. Check it out. Fill out an application. Enjoy a 7-day free trial. I can extend our half off lifetime membership opportunity. It's $285. If you mention watching this video and mention UHS, shoot me, put that in the application that you watch this
nice.
Cast, and we'll give you half off of that lifetime membership. Think about that. A $285 one-time payment can buy you a whole lifetime of education. That's what you're going to pay for
amazing.
One class. Oof. Anywhere else.
That's so great.
Check it out. Jump on it. Act with integrity out there. Treat every customer as though it were a family member or a friend, and watch your business grow and flourish.
You beat me to something real quick. I actually have something coming up right now called Keys to Success, which is actually going to be something where I want to hear from you, just some kind of a phrase or a thought, something that we're going to just put on screen right above, like here in the middle, and it's going to say Wayne's Key to Success. And if you want to go ahead and just share what you want to say, your little catchphrase or statement, motto, whatever you want to do.
I would say just that. If you treat people like family or friends and watch your business grow.
Lovely.
That's it. That's the key to success. And that's funny. I actually wrote, I probably wrote 3 articles for Aloha about 6 years ago. And it was called The Keys to Success for Social Media Marketing.
Nice.
So we think alike.
This is cool. Well, good, man. I really do appreciate you being on here. This has really been a fantastic episode. You're like a overflowing well of knowledge and thought and just like thoughtful ways of being a business person, if not just a professional, if not just being a person. You seem to think so far beyond most people when it comes to just, you know, not only marketing, but how to present yourself and how to have a discussion. You are like on top of this whole idea of networking and setting up things so that you're always being thought of and talked about. And you seem to really be ahead of yourself. I see you as being a real pinnacle of success. And thank you for being on our show, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be here. And thank you for your kind words. We're only getting started.
All right. Well, once again, guys, check out Wayne at waynslockshop.com. Thank you very much, man. We'll see you soon. Have a great day. We'll check you guys out here soon once again on Louie's Locksmith Lounge. Locksmith Lounge with Louie. I'm going to say that right one of these times. Welcome back again next time, guys. We'll see you later. Peace. Have a good day.